It seems long and intimidating, but it almost swept by, like, the tide that, like, comes in before you were expecting.
Yeah.
It had that same feeling.
Absolutely.
The Toilers of the Sea tells of the reclusive Guernsey fisherman who salvages the engines of a wrecked ship by performing great feats of engineering, matching wits with sea and storm, and doing battle with a great sea monster, all to win the hand of a ship owner's daughter. Matt, our guest for Ebenezer LePage, did not like this book, as you may have heard him express in the episode. So one thing that people maybe should be warned about is the fact that the first section, it titled The Archipelago of the Channel, doesn't get into the main story at all. It really is just descriptive writing about the islands.
For about 50 pages. Give or take.
More or less factual, although I think there's a lot of...
flourishes.
Yeah. Embellishments. I mean, it's about the sea, so maybe it's obvious, but it feels very Melvillian.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It has, like, Thomas Brown, like, essayistic texture.
Yeah. Do you think people need to be warned about that, or do you think they need to be told that in terms of hype?
Some people may need to be warned.
See, when I learned that, I was like, get me this book right now.
And I loved this part of the book, and it may have been... one of my favorites. So I wanted to read a little bit from the chapter on rocks.
I was about to read from the chapter on rocks too.
Oh, were you? All right, I'm just going to read a really long segment because you love books and that's what you're here for.
It's too good.
In the archipelago of the channel, the coasts are almost everywhere wild. These islands have charming interiors, but a stern and uninviting approach. Since the channel is a kind of Mediterranean, the waves are short and violent, and the tide has a lapping movement. Hence the bizarre battering to which the cliffs are subjected and the deep erosion of the coasts. Skirting these coasts, you pass through a series of mirages. At every turn, the rocks try to deceive you. Where do these illusions come from? From the granite. It is very strange. You see huge stone toes, which have no doubt come out of the water to breathe. Giant nuns hasten on their way, heading for the horizon. The petrified folds of their veils have the form of the fleeing wind. Kings with plutonian crowns meditate on massive thrones, ever under attack by the breakers. Nameless creatures buried in the rock stretch out their arms, showing the fingers of their open hands. All this is the formless coast. Draw nearer, and there is nothing there. Stone can sometimes disappear like this. Here there is a fortress, there a crudely shaped temple. Elsewhere a chaos of dilapidated houses and dismantled walls. All the ruins of a deserted city. But there is no city there, no temple, no fortress, only the cliffs. As you draw closer or move farther away, as you drift off or turn back, the coast falls to pieces. No kaleidoscope is quicker to disintegrate. The view breaks apart and reforms. Perspective plays its tricks. This block of rock is a tripod, then it is a lion, then it is an angel and unfolds its wings. Then it is a seated figure reading a book. Nothing changes form so quickly as clouds, except, perhaps, rocks.
It's just so perfect.
So if you feel like you want to read 50 pages of that, and you must.
I don't know how you couldn't. The visual.
I do. I try to be generous. I try to be understanding.
I can't be generous. There was so many great visual descriptions in there. The writing's exciting. I am engulfed.
Yeah. Well, if Matt Tenenbaum has some hostility towards Hugo, we have to talk about Ebenezer's hostility towards Hugo.
A little bit.
So, to my surprise, I mean, we had decided what we were going to pair for this book before we read Ebenezer. But Victor Hugo is actually name-checked in the content of the book. In the form of a statue. So Ebenezer, like Matt Tenenbaum, has not read any Victor Hugo, right? He says... Victor Hugo was a famous Frenchman who used to live in a big house up in Hauteville. But that was before my time. He wrote stories and poetry books in French, but I haven't read any. I used to see his books for sale in Boots' window up Smith Street, but I don't see them about now. The statue was put up in Candy Grounds, and there was a lot of talk about it. Up to the last minute, some people were saying it didn't ought to have been allowed. I like the statue myself. He is standing on the edge of a rock, with his coattails flying in the wind, and looks as if he was alive. The trouble was that at the top of the gardens, there was a statue of Queen Victoria, and all she could see of Victor Hugo was his backside. It seems that he had said some very rude things about her when he was alive, and it was thought it had been done on purpose by the French as a dig at the English. However, the fuss and bother died down after a lot of writing for and against, and the statue was left where it was put. Or perhaps there would have been a war between France and England. It's all right now, because they have built a pavilion between the Queen and old Victor, so she don't have to look at his behind for the rest of her life.
Very different writing styles.
But equally goated.
Equally great. I do feel like their descriptions about the coast or about the land, while written very differently, I see the same picture in my head, honestly. It's just painted with a different style brush.
So, in your mind, did G.B. Edwards read Victor Hugo?
I should have read the biography that Matt Tenenbaum was reading. If I got an idea of what G.B. Edwards was into, I could probably answer that question better.
I would guess yes.
I would guess yes, too. Because, at least talking with Matt, it sounds like Ebenezer LePage is much more separated from the real G.B. Edwards than I thought it was going to be. I thought it was a little bit more autobiographical. Same. But it really sounds like he tried to take the island that was his home and make a man out of that rather than telling the story about him and his time on the island, necessarily.
Right.
I would say probably, but...
Well, I don't know if it's a coincidence, but one of the significant players in Hugo's book is named Ebenezer.
Yeah. That's a great point. Eek. Well, speaking of other people that haven't read Victor Hugo until now.
That's me.
That's you.
Yeah.
I was the Victor Hugo geek. This is the introduction for you. What was your first experience with Victor Hugo? Were you like, I don't know why this person has such a canonical following? Were you like, I've fallen into...
love.
You fell in love.
I was in complete admiration of the book from the very first page.
Did it make it to the last page?
Well, we'll get to the ending.
Oh my God.
But I thought it was magnificent. I was completely on board. I just thought that he's such a juicy storyteller.
Mm.
But there was so much that you could like from a kind of writer perspective.
Mm-hmm.
It felt like a really good balance of the two things. And I love a story about the sea. There's a certain part of this that felt like Moby Dick meets the Titanic meets Les Mis.
Mm-hmm.
And what more could you want?